Nathan Zagura, Vic Carucci back with you on Cleveland Browns Daily. Covered a lot of bases here today, and now it is time to delve into the Friday forecast.
Yes. Hi, guys.
What's up, Dino?
Dave DiNatale, our outstanding producer.
All right, let's get it rolling.
Number 5.
Do it.
I like, by the way, thanks to Carly.
Carly gave you a nice shout-out.
She did on Twitter. I appreciate it.
Hey, y'all. She gave you a y'all shout-out.
Fabulous.
She called you the fabulous producer. She can call you that. We can't call.
No, we can't say
you're fabulous. We can say you're outstanding.
I'll take that. All right, guys. I'm actually, because we didn't have after further review this week because of the holiday, I'm going to make this first question for you guys a
fact or fiction.
Thanks, Buffy. Although the Browns can't hire him until after New England's out of the playoffs, we will hear by Sunday that Josh McDaniels and the Browns have agreed on a deal. Is that a fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction. I'm going to say that even if the interview goes well, I think the Browns, and especially this time around, especially because they got it wrong a year ago, probably should go through the whole thing of a whole process to get it right, to make sure everything's exhausted, and that would include the Gus Malzahn's, if indeed that's real, and that they'd have a shot at him after the Auburn National Championship game against Florida State on Monday night. And that the name Adam Gase is out there. I don't know that they necessarily give up on him, and that, of course, would depend on when Denver finishes playing. So I'm going to say fiction.
Yeah, I'm going to say fiction as well because there are candidates that they won't be able to interview until after that point. Unless he absolutely blows them away, I'm going to say fiction. I think it will take a little bit longer than that.
All right, and that thought.
Number 4.
Let me read you this quote and get your guys' take on this. Earlier today on the Dan Patrick Show, quote, I never acknowledge or deny whether anyone's contacted me or not. This isn't something publicly I do one way or the other. That's something that's always personal and no one ever knows. That's something you never know what'll come your way in life. Things change from year to year, from time to time. And right now, I love what I'm doing and the people I work with at Oklahoma. So right now, it isn't something that I'm looking to pursue, but I never know down the road. That from Bob Stoops. That sounded like a non-denial to me if he'd like the coach in the NFL. What do you guys think?
Sounds like a head coach of a college program who's putting enough out there. We've seen this magic work before by a couple of other coaches to make sure he gets a nice pay raise from that institution that employs him and says, you know, I'm going to keep the doors open unless you guys want to come up with some scratch that keeps me here for much longer and maybe the rest of my career.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's just good negotiating, good tactics. Get the money. Show me the dollar bills.
You know, because, by the way, I mean, Bob Stoops was a candidate for the Browns job in, I think, 1999, mm-hmm. 2001, when Butch Davis got it. And I think he may have even been a candidate in 2004, 2005, before Romeo got it.
The dial-a candidate.
Right, exactly. You know, when in doubt. Just ask Bob Stoops if he wants to come to Cleveland.
Yeah, I think that the only thing that's giving it maybe more plausibility, if any, and I'm not saying that has any plausibility, but the makes it plausible now is okay. You've heard the and Jason Lockenfor was with us earlier and put out that quote out of box thought process. He had not heard Stoops' name brought up, but he's brought up Gus Malzahn. He's brought up Franklin from Vanderbilt. And so just the willingness to go there, they were going down that road, as we talked about a year ago, with Chip Kelly, with Doug Marrone from the college ranks. So Nick Saban also. So I think that's what's giving it just a little bit of plausibility but this time. But it sounds to me very much like I'm just going to keep the door open enough so that they'll come in and give me more cash.
Paid.
Yep.
Paid.
Number 3.
We'll get to the playoffs in a second, but on number 3 for you guys, interesting that Texans owner Bob McNair coming out today and saying that he's open to trading out of the number 1 overall pick, saying, quote, maybe we'll trade down and still get a quarterback that can do the job and get an outstanding defensive player. It's an exciting time. Everything's a moving target. If you're the Browns, how much do you part with to go from number 4 to number 1 to ensure you get your guy, whoever that is?
You know, obviously he wants to just put it out there that they're open and see if they can get a great offer like the St. Louis Rams did for RG3 that is going to set that organization up for years and years. So It just depends on how they think things are going to shake out. I mean, they're still picking number four. As it stands now, I would imagine they're going to get one of their top three quarterbacks on the board. So it just is a matter of if they have three that are in a similar group or if they don't. If they only have one guy that they want, they might have to make a move. If there are two, maybe they have to make a move, but at the same time, they could very well be okay. It is a very, very interesting dilemma that is going to confront this organization. You'll just have to see how they think it's going to go down.
My sense of this all along has been the Johnny Football factor in all of this. In other words, where is he relative to where the Browns might pick? And the thing that I worried about watching him put on that incredible show the other night was that did he play his way up to the top of the draft? And to me, there's no coincidence that this comes out in the aftermath of that performance, because I think that changed the thinking of a lot of people who look at the board right now and who originally thought of Johnny Manziel being maybe that third or fourth guy available, and now potentially see him as the top overall guy. So what does it take to get him? And you know, I think that's really, because I think that's the guy that I've felt right along has been someone this team's been kind of dialed in on. There's other names that we know, Teddy Bridgewater, obviously go down the list, Blake Bortles, of quarterbacks that are intriguing, that are on everybody's sort of top list of quarterbacks. But I think he's the one that will dictate this the most. And if it turns out that, you know, to get him, the only way to get him is to move up, I think they got to look seriously at that. But I worry of what it will take to get there, because this team, despite having those five all-pro guys, and I don't know how many of them, all of them are going to be on the team after this year, and despite the cap room and again, having 10 overall draft picks, do you really want to part with assets to the degree that you focus just on that one player when you know you need that at least one other complementary piece at wide receiver and probably two more? You
right.
need other pieces at tight end. You need offensive line help, even if Alex Mack stays. So it's, yes, I'm not loving any thought of giving up a ton to move up.
Right. It is going to be, you know, a situation, as you pointed out, there are multiple holes. There are multiple things that you want to be able to do with this team. And if that quarterback is the guy and they are convinced that he is the guy, it is worth it if that's the only way to get him. But time will tell as this draft breaks up and as we see people rise and fall, etc. It is going to be that'll be one of the interesting stories, because right now we're talking about all the assets. They may have to package some of those assets just to get one player, which I wouldn't like to see. I thought at four they had a very good shot at Johnny Football. I still think they do have a very good shot at him at number four. I wouldn't be surprised if Bridgewater or Clowney go number one. But this is, as you know, Vic, a very fluid process that will likely change many times over by the time we get to May.
True. Totally agree.
All right, guys. Number two. First of our two Call Your Shots, we begin with the NFC Wild Cards. Tomorrow, Saints, y'all, at the Eagles. And then Sunday, it'll be the 49ers at the Packers. Call your shots, gentlemen.
All right. I'm going to go with, I'm sorry, Carly, I am going to go with the Eagles. I think it's going to be very tough for the Saints team that just doesn't play well on the road. The weather will be a factor, but the bigger factor will be, and I know this is the fourth-ranked defense in the league that Rob Ryan has going for the Saints, and they get after the quarterback, they do it. But their struggles do come in the ability, I think, to deal with the run, and dealing with LeSean McCoy will be a problem for them. I know that Nick Foles is an X factor starting his first playoff game, and maybe there's that jitter thing that Drew Brees isn't going to have even on the road, but I'm going to say that running game will provide enough confidence overall, and we will see this Eagles team advance.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Philadelphia Eagles there, I think they're going to be able to run the football with LeSean McCoy, set up some play action for some big plays. It's a team that seems to be getting better as the season goes on, and I believe that you will see that trend continue. Sorry, y'all, but I do think that Philadelphia at home has it. If this game were being played in New Orleans, I would feel much better about the chances of the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah. What about Sunday at Lambeau with
no
the Packers 49ers?
No question, the 49ers are winning that game. The run defense, here's some stats for you. The run defense right now of the Green Bay Packers is absolutely atrocious. Since week 8, they're giving up 146 yards rushing per game to running backs, 5.1 yards per carry. They've allowed a 100-yard rusher in 5 of the last 6 games and 7 of the last 9. And Green Bay's only won 3 of the last 8 games when allowing a 100-yard rusher. Well, guess what? When Frank Gore runs for 100 yards, the Niners have won 12 of the last 13. With the weather being an issue, it's going to come down to physicality, running the ball. I think that the 49ers are going to pound the rock. Frank Gore and company will win that one.
I'm going to agree with my partner here and go with the 49ers as well. I think they're the better team. I think it's as simple as that. The specific areas that Nathan broke down as far as the Packers' inability to handle the run are going to be problematic for them against Gore. This is such a balanced offense that the Niners have. I think Colin Kaepernick will play better than, you know, will continue to play well and better than he did even in the last postseason. I think it was a learning experience for him, and the guy learned a lot, even though he did well enough to help his team reach the Super Bowl. And I think there's that sense of unfinished business that the 49ers have. That defense can be so stout and physical. Even though it'll be a million degrees below zero, whatever it's going to be there at Lambeau Field, I just feel that the Niners will withstand that as well as the challenge that they're going to face from Aaron Rodgers.
And finally,
number one.
Let's call your shot on the AFC wild cards. Tomorrow, Kansas City is at Indianapolis, and then on Sunday in Cincinnati, the Bengals will welcome in the Chargers.
Well, you know, I've been going back and forth on this KC-Indianapolis game. I really have. And it's not an easy one, at least in my mind, to figure out. I think it's going to be a close, competitive game. I'm going to give the edge to Kansas City. I think they're just getting healthy enough up front with their pass rushers. I think Justin Houston is back. You know, again, how close to whatever percentage he is, we'll see. And Tamba Hali, they're going to try. I think he's going to try to play. So, you know, it's hard to – I'm not basing it all on this, but they're better with those guys than they are without them, obviously. I think they're going to run the football pretty effectively. They can control tempo and clock that way. I think Andy Reid is a pretty good coach under these circumstances and knows how to max what his team does. As long as he doesn't get too crazy and start saying, you know what, I want my quarterback, I want Alex Smith to start winging it all over the lot. If that happens, that's trouble. If they do their thing with the screen passes to Jamal Charles and company while he's running the football effectively, I think they can keep it close enough and then, you know, then turn this into a real, you know, field goal kind of game at the end.
I agree with you. I think that that's what it's going to be, and I like Kansas City in that game as well. I think when you look at Cincinnati right now, they've just been too good at home. Would I be shocked if San Diego won that game? No, but the fact of the matter is Cincinnati in their last 5 games at home, they have not scored below 34 points in any of them, averaging 41.6 with an average margin of victory of 24 points per game. Since the 8-0 at home this season, I think they're just too good in their own building for San Diego, even though the one thing that has me thinking maybe they can get it done is the fact that San Diego has that kind of that charmed existence, the way they got in the playoffs. Granted, it was their own fault that it ended up being a charmed path into the playoffs, but it certainly was when it was all said and done against the backups of Kansas City. It kind of reminds me of a little bit of hey, diddle, diddle, Ray Rice up the middle. You got, you know, that Baltimore kind of shocked the world getting in the playoffs. Their quarterback got hot. Phillip Rivers clearly capable of getting hot. Ryan Matthews has never run the ball more effectively. They've got a pretty good pass defense. They have the recipe to make that run. Ultimately, though, I think the Bengals at home just a little too tough.
I think the Bengals have to win at home. This is pretty much a mandate. I think 11 seasons Marvin Lewis has been there. He's, you know, these one and duns are not going to work anymore for him, I don't think, as much as I think he has obviously earned the right to continue on there. But I just don't – I think the guy has it down now. He's got the talent in place. There's still a shakiness at that quarterback position, and that's the X factor. That's the variable where it could go sideways. If it goes sideways for the Bengals anywhere, that's the place that it will. But I don't have any faith. Once again, I'm picking the better team. I think the Chargers made a nice run to get here to get this far. But this is where it will end for them.
All right, guys, that is your Friday forecast.
All right. And we've got more coming up. We'll bring in Gerard Cherry with us next on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty 40, ESPN 850, WKNR.